Game for Thought Podcast. Reflections on ethics and gaming. With Ruth Amano.
Hi everyone, I'm Amano, and as always I am joined by my co-host
Ruth.
We're two journalism students who like playing and discussing games. This podcast is based on the Game for Thought livestream organized by Digital Arts and Entertainment, and here we discuss ethics in video games. Our goal is to make these topics discussable and maybe provide some new insights. And as a side note, every game mentioned in the podcast you can find in the show notes, so be sure to check those out. Today's episode will be about AI and the progress of technology in video games. And for the first time, we have a guest joining us. Robin, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello, hello. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm Robin Rode. I'm a game history teacher at Digital Arts and Entertainment. I teach a lot of things, but I guess that's the reason why I'm here today. And yes. I was also the moderator on the latest Game for Thought podcast.
Yes.
Live stream.
Live stream, yes. Now you are on the podcast. Because we as two journalism students don't really have the technical know-how of AI and, you know, technology in video games, we decided it would be best to have a guest. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much. Our first topic of today is the progress of technology. And of course, we can't do that without talking about the new generation of consoles, so PS5 and Xbox Series X. There's 4K, there's 120 frames per second, there's ray tracing, there's all kinds of new stuff. Where can we go from here is the question.
Well, first up, I'm going to start by saying I hate the new Xbox X series or S series.
The name or just the console?
Well, first of all, the name, that is, it's an awful name. It just rolls off your tongue, doesn't
it? Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
But no, I think where we have some true innovation, and I sound like I'm very excited about it, but I'm not that excited by the latest generation of consoles. But where we have the most innovation for me is with the new PS5.
Yeah.
And it's actually not even in the specs in like the 4K 120 FPS.
Yeah, I don't really care about that either.
Yeah, so. None of that impresses me. None of that impresses me. The only thing that does impress me with the new PS5, and when I say impress, again, I'm using that term quite loosely, is a new controller.
Yeah.
The controller.
Yes,
the
only...
I did talk about that as
that
well.
That is the only thing I know about it.
I know about the triggers.
The haptics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
super
that's
cool.
The main point for me that we got that's new. Even though that's something that's been existing for quite some time, the new finesse and the way they tuned it, is quite cool. So for the people who don't know what's going on with the controllers, usually when you press the triggers at the back of a controller, it has like a kind of a state of being. You press it and it has a certain resistance to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right now, what they did is they added some cool gears, some gizmos on the inside. Let's not get too technical. and when you press it, there's more or less resistance depending on what you're doing in the game. If,
cool.
Of course, the game supplies the platform for that, the underlying structure. So let's say, for example, you are sliding across ice and you're trying to brace yourself in some kind of way, then that'll go very smoothly because it's slippery. It goes really fast. But if you're going over gravel or you're climbing something and it's an uphill battle all the time, then those haptics will kick in and it gets really hard to press those buttons. And of course, you can turn that off if that's not your sort of thing.
The first thing my boyfriend said when that got announced was, oh, yay, a new feature I can turn off. Because he doesn't like the vibration feature in controllers either. He doesn't like all that stuff. But I was super excited about it because when we saw stuff for The Last of Us 2, bow and arrow is a big thing there, which a lot of people were very excited about to use the adaptive triggers for that, because you can feel the resistance of the bow, like if you draw it, and that's really cool.
That
I thought it was
cool.
Really cool.
So the future is 40, where we have the smell coming out from the controllers.
Yeah, that's maybe also a feature I'll turn off at that point.
When you play like a zombie game and it's just like rotting flesh.
No, thank you.
I get the vibration function, turning that one off. I hate that.
I turn it off as well.
I don't like it.
I love it.
I don't really play console that much, but I don't know. I love the vibration.
I hate it. I always turn it off. I even turn it off in my PlayStation settings itself, so I don't have to do it for every single game anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Don't like it.
I think it's because I'm more of a PC gamer than a console gamer.
I am, but it's more of a console gamer. So I turn it off even though I know it's there because I am a console gamer and I play it all the time. And especially in like, because I play a lot of first-person shooters, it's constant vibration otherwise. Mm.
I guess that's interesting because I'm also a PC player most of the time, but I do like the vibration because it's something different. You don't get that on PC. Like, imagine having a keyboard with just vibration.
God, no. Right. Thank you.
So as a console player, are you excited about the new PS5? Is it a must-have?
I'm a PlayStation gamer, so yes, I'm very excited about the new PS5. I haven't had the chance to pick one up yet because stock is just not there.
It's awful.
That's just Belgium for you.
So
it's not even Belgium.
Yeah, it's all over the world.
The whole scalping thing, the awful introduction of the PS5. I hate it. I think it's an absolute atrocity. How can you do that as a company?
And the thing was, Xbox did it first. So Xbox had their sales first, and you think, oh, Sony will look at this and be like, oh, this is a mess, we'll do it better. But they didn't. So
I don't understand, like, why do they not just make more?
Because the chips, there's shortage of those chips that also go in cars, and there's like a whole big issue around that. That's like a totally different conversation.
But maybe wouldn't it have been better to then delay the release?
There you go. But of course, delaying a release of something like that you've been hyping up for a while also costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I agree with you.
Yeah, but there's also the discussion, like the PS4 and the Xbox One could at least have gone for another year without issue. Like, the graphics aren't that insanely better on the new consoles, even though there is 120 frames per second and all that. It's not that big a step. So I think we could have lasted easily with PS4
because,
and Xbox One.
Because you say we have 120 FPS now on the new consoles, but that's a bit of an illusion for a lot of people, because you're not
really
always going to have that.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It depends on the game. Yeah, it depends on your settings. Yeah. It depends on a whole number of things. And the 120 FPS, if you really want your game to be nice and shiny and crisp, you're not going to get 120 FPS.
I genuinely don't really care about it. I don't have a 4K TV either. I don't really care.
I mean, it's like you said, Robin, not all games have that 120 FPS. So
Thing I do think is really cool, and you see that especially in like the Ratchet and Clank trailers they've been releasing, is the ray tracing, and that is really cool to me.
Ray tracing
explain
is
to
cool.
me.
Okay,
I'm normie.
So ray tracing in its simplest form, there's a lot of hardcore ray tracers that are gonna hate me for explaining it like this, but let's keep it nice and simple. In your environments, your 3D environments, you got a lot of light sources going. You got a lamp, you got this, you got that. And each of these light sources, they shoot out rays into the environment. And then that hits on a certain surface, bounces back into the gamer's eye. It sort of calculates it depending on the screen and everything and the camera viewpoint in your scene. And ray tracing is just going to give you the most accurate, the most realistic representation of that. But it takes a lot of processing power of your console or computer, even, because ray tracing is, in parentheses, new to consoles, but it's been around for a long time. What the thing is, why is it interesting, why is it special now, is that usually what you do to get those nice reflections and surfaces, you bake in the light. So all the lights you see and the lighting effects on surfaces in games normally are static. They look good, and it gives the illusion of moving and doing things, but they are static. But when you have real-time ray tracing, that changes. So if you pick up a lamp or you destroy an environment, then that light is going to go with it. And that's something not completely new, but that has new possibilities in the creation of games to bring that to consoles.
And the thing about the Ratchet & Clank trailer, Clank is like a little metal robot, and he reflects light very easily because he's made of metal, so it looks super pretty. And that's what I was very excited about when I saw that trailer.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it brings the immersion as well, right?
Yeah, it's super cool. It's honestly super cool.
I'm just happy they're bringing a new Ratchet & Clank. It's one of those few series that they make follow-ups of that don't progressively get worse.
I didn't. The only one I didn't like, this is, sorry, Manol.
I mean, I know the game, I just never played
it. The only one
really
I didn't like was the 2016 game, like the remake of the first one, because it tied too much into the movie, and I was like, no. Either you remake the first one entirely, or you don't.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing. Sorry. a bit of a geeking out there. There's also VR. That is not new, but PlayStation announced new controllers for theirs, so we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And you have a very...
Yeah, I have a bit of a... It's an opinion. Kind of a personal opinion on VR. Once again, one of those things that maybe some people will disagree with me about.
That's fine.
I think going into the future, at least for the near future, VR is a semi-dead thing that people are trying to resuscitate all the time. They're trying to keep it alive, which is not unnecessary for me, okay? So there's a reason why people are doing it. But here's the reason why I think VR is kind of dead.
Is this VR in gaming or VR in general?
I'm going to say mostly in gaming, but even in general, it's not doing that well. But if we're talking in general, the more interesting thing to talk about is AR. But now I'm suddenly branching on a lot of topics in my head. So if I continue on the VR trend,
we're gonna go in gaming.
For gaming, you need a lot of peripherals. You need a lot of things and items when you want your own VR setup at home, and that's all clunky and expensive right now. And also, putting one of those huge VR goggles on your head is actually not that pleasant.
I would not know because I can't, because I wear glasses.
Yeah, we both wear glasses. I have motion sickness.
See,
so
that's where it starts already for me, okay? So that's an issue I don't have, but let's add that on top of the list.
People with glasses can't play it easily.
But let's say you don't wear glasses and you can use the Oculus. Yeah. It's also not pleasant. It's very constraining. Then if you want to do it correctly, you put on the gloves. You take the controller in your hand, which also takes me out of my immersion. And then if you really want to do it well, you step on some sort of 360-degree treadmill.
Yeah.
And then you're already looking at quite a lot of money in terms of investment. And then you need a whole dedicated room or section of a room to be able to just do that. And by the time I've installed myself in all of those things, I already don't feel like playing anymore. So that's one of the reasons I think VR right now isn't working.
Yeah.
Now, if we can change that hardware and make it more natural and make it more integrated and smaller and there's less of a barrier to use, that's when VR starts getting interesting again. And that's why I'm saying people keep resuscitating VR. People keep researching VR for games in the hopes of making it more accessible.
Yeah.
And if they do that, then VR becomes an interesting thing again. But I don't see that happening in the next 10 years.
Mm. Is it even worth the investment then?
Right now?
Yeah.
Do you mean as a developer
to make the hardware like more like smaller, more accessible?
Someone's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
It all depends on what
but
you want to do
also
with your company.
Like the only game that I'm like, oh, I would get a VR for that is Beat Saber.
Yes, Beat Saber.
It's Beat Saber, and that's it. And like, to me, this is a personal opinion, there's not even that many interesting games on the platform, but people keep making games for that platform. So I'm kind of like, why don't you make non-VR games? Like, the new, I think it's a Medal of Honor game, came out on VR, and my dad was so excited because he used to play Medal of Honor, and he was very excited about a new Medal of Honor game. And then it was on VR, and we don't have a VR, and my dad was just kind of like, well, that's very tragic.
there are games who do both, right?
Yeah, Concrete Genie does that very well as well. Concrete Genie is a game where you paint, basically, and it comes to life. It's a PlayStation Plus game. It was a PlayStation Plus game last month. And you can paint and the paintings come to life. And it's very cute. But you can play it in VR and then you actually paint the walls. Or you can play it normally. And even playing it normally, it works perfectly. It was great. I played it without VR and it was very fun. And I think that's a good way to implement VR so that people who don't have it can play it. And people who do can
just
play
it. Just do
as
both, right?
That's definitely the middle ground.
Yeah.
See, the only game right now I'd be very interested in playing in VR is Skyrim.
Spider-Man, honestly.
If they make it well. Because swinging my own sword, bow and arrow, running, because I would want to do the physical exercise. You know, climbing that mountain needs to feel like a challenge. Then it becomes interesting again for me. Because that's something you don't get in a normal game.
I'm mostly thinking of many games like that. Like Breath of the Wild is like that as well, where you're holding your sword and climbing mountains. And
gamers would exercise so much if that was like an actual feature.
Ring Fit Adventure. Yeah, true. It's very popular. That's not VR.
No,
but
it's not.
You're... I get it. I get that. I have one.
I want one so badly.
Yep.
Yeah. Looks tough.
It looks tough, but it looks fun as well. It's like gaming and exercise in one.
Is that the future then? Getting gamers to exercise?
See, it may not be the future, but
it's fun.
What Ring Fit did really well is that they didn't just make a fitness game.
Yeah, apparently there's a story.
They
in
made
it
a
as
game.
Well.
Yeah, true.
That you need to exercise in to complete it. That's the difference. They put the game first and everything ties into that.
That's pretty dope.
And that's what gamers feel. That's what people feel. That's why you get excited to go back to Ring Fit every day to do your exercise, to do all of that, is because the story progresses. And of course, there's times where it gets a bit stale and you feel like you're exercising. But in general, I have to say it's the best implementation of the whole fitness genre that I've ever experienced. Because what we've had so far has been absolute trash, in my opinion.
Wii Sports Resort.
I mean, we have Just Dance, which I think is pretty fun.
Just Dance I thought was fun as well, but that's like a game most...
But that's fun, but is that...
It's not every day.
Do you turn that on and are you like, oh, I'm going to get my fitness
now? Absolutely not.
Did we ever play that together?
Yeah, we did actually.
It's just acting silly, actually.
But you have an option to have it like more intense, I know.
Yeah,
that...
you have like a sweat option,
yeah,
I think
sweat
it's
option.
Called.
Yeah.
But at that point, you're just showing off to your friends, right?
Yeah, but also it's not fun.
Whereas turning up the difficulty in Ring Fit is fun.
Yes.
And the cool part is the game has like bosses and things like that.
Yeah, I've seen like bits and pieces
of
it on Twitter.
And you feel,
a lot of videos,
you feel like you've been fighting a boss. When you're drenched in sweat after 10 minutes of getting that health bar down, you're done for the day.
Yeah. I love watching videos of people doing
it. Yeah, I know.
It's so much
super
fun.
Cool. The only thing is that it's a bit expensive, but...
It's an investment.
It is a bit expensive, but it's also not that expensive.
No, but the thing is, my Joy-Cons broke. Because of the drift issue. So I will have to buy new Joy-Cons, which
is
70 euros. And then the Ring Fit, which is 90 euros. So it's kind of, it's 160
euros. How come
euros.
Like controllers and Joy-Cons in general are so expensive?
Yeah, but the thing is, how come there's so much drift? Because PlayStation 5 is apparently having it as well, which is something I've been wondering.
Well, the thing
we
about...
We have Robin here, so we can ask him that.
The thing about those controllers is that there's a lot of complicated things inside them. They need to be able to do a lot of things. If you take a look at just a normal D-pad, that's not what a controller is anymore. You don't just go in four directions and then press A to interact and that's it. Right now it needs to have like motion sensors in it. It needs to feel pressure. It needs to... So there's just so much packed into such a small amount, and the room for error is great. Because you press that button and you do that 1,000 times, and sometimes you press a little bit harder and sometimes you don't, and sometimes you're pressing A like super fast.
Yeah.
The possibility for something to go wrong on the inside of those things is just so great. So when they're creating these, they have to keep that in mind, and that makes everything more expensive. The more foolproof you want to make something...
Yeah, but the thing is, for example, Joy-Cons are quite expensive, but they're definitely not foolproof because it's
no,
a whole...
And that should already tell you something. How complex it is on the inside.
Yeah, that's true. But it's just, I don't know, I don't like it. I've invested in a Pro controller instead of Joy-Cons instead, because those are less likely to break. And now I can't play a lot of games because they need Joy-Cons.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the appeal of the Switch, right? To have the Joy-Cons and to be Joy-Cons. Able to just swing them around.
But I always wonder, what do you do with your controllers? I've never had
a PlayStation 4 controller break on me. My Pro controller is fine. The thing is, I didn't play my Switch for a year. And after I started playing it again, it drifted. And I was like, well, okay. So
the controller knows. Apparently, you've abandoned your Switch, and that's just sad. Nintendo vengeance.
Yeah, apparently. So another one of my control, I bought one of those discount Pro controllers as well, so we could play with two people, because my boyfriend and I like to play games together sometimes. And we didn't use that one for ages, and then it had drift as well. It's just not using them apparently gives them drift.
It's like Apple products. After a while, they just decide to...
I knew it was a discount one, so I knew it. There was a chance that it was going to break because it wasn't the actual Nintendo official licensed product. But I was also a bit disappointed. So yeah, that's my experience with that. But I'm not one of those people who throws them at walls or anything like that. I know people like that, and I don't want to do that.
Play Smash.
They cost way too much to throw them at walls.
That's true.
And then there's the second topic of the panel, which is AI.
Which is something we don't know much about.
This is actually why Robin is here, even though he's talked a lot already. She's good. And we, first of all, have a question. How is AI used in video games?
Okay. So, once again, there's several layers to this, right? We can get really complex, and that's where I'll have to stop, because my knowledge of AI is limited to what's needed to make it work in a game, but not what the actual mechanic... Yeah, I'm not a programmer.
That's so enough.
Before diving into that... I do have to say, this is a big misconception, and we talked about it a little bit on the live stream. For a lot of people, when we are talking about game AI, I actually think the term AI is completely wrong. Okay. There's no intelligence behind it. There's no learning behind it. So that's something people should be aware of when we're talking about game AI. It's not artificial intelligence.
Okay.
It's more a set of rules that it handles well, that it starts stacking in a way. So the way game AI works, and there's different kinds of game AI. I'll keep using AI even though I think it's wrong. But the way game AI works, the simplest way is to think of NPCs in your game. So the non-playable characters.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's two big components to game AI. That's pathfinding and decision trees. Yeah. So pathfinding is knowing if your character follows a certain route, and if something interrupts that route, what does it do? Yeah. Or if it gets taken off that route, let's say you run it over with a car and it's no longer on that route, how does it go back? What route does it take again? So pathfinding, simplest one to understand, I think. It's literally just a path that's been created for this thing, and then how does it stay on that or does not stay on. What's more interesting, and that's where we get that illusion of intelligence, that's why people use the term AI in games, are those decision trees. So it's basically just a bunch of smart programmers that think, what does this NPC need to interact with? What are the possible ways that this NPC is gonna be interacted with? Yeah. And how does all of that tie together? What if that starts mixing with each other? So, for example, we have, let's take a game like Red Dead Redemption.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Western-style game. If I shoot my gun in the air...
Everyone will go...
Everybody ducks. But chances are nothing happens. But there's this very small chance that a bird will drop dead from the sky because you accidentally shot it. And that is not something any of the programmers has planned. That is not something anyone in the game has planned. That is because that bird follows a certain path in the game and will phase in or phase out depending on where you are in the game. And as long as nothing interrupts, you just have nice birds in the sky flying everywhere. But suddenly, because that bird also has a rule to it. If it takes damage equal to a certain amount, then it dies, which is what most NPCs have. And because you shoot in the air and you happen to hit it at the exact same time that your bullet interacts with that object, that is the NPC, it dies and it will drop down. And that stops everything that that NPC is doing, unless, of course, you have a new rule that says, oh, but they're zombies. And now that bird is going to come back to life after 2 minutes. So that's another rule that would be stacked on top. And it's sort of like an if-then-else structure, which is the basics of programming. Yeah. But those decision trees can get incredibly complex, like how in Red Dead Redemption, they'll remember if you shoot someone in their town and they'll treat you differently, or they'll start hunting you down. And it could be that you never experience any of this, and that's okay. That's just a rule that's somewhere. But those rules stack. Let's say you shoot someone, okay, then that person might come after you. But if you kill that person, then then that gets activated in a whole lot of other people. So that's where that intelligence comes from. It is, and those rules can be anything you want them to be in the game, right? So I'm just giving this small example. I could keep giving examples because it's just so incredibly complex. And the limit is the amount of time you want to spend on adding those rules. Because as a game developer, you also have to check a little bit. If those rules start to intersect with each other, is that still going to run well? And that's where we sometimes get very hilarious NPCs running in corners or getting stuck.
Is that why horses fly in Skyrim?
For example.
That's amazing.
Even though that's probably because some rule of physics was applied in just the wrong way in that game that allowed for that to happen. Yeah. So that's where all the bugs come from. It's from that complex AI that has to start intersecting with each other.
Okay.
Because then you have to think, okay, what if an NPC shoots you, misses, the bullet continues, and that hits another NPC? Oh. Will the NPC start hunting that one NPC because that one NPC killed someone in their town? Do you see how complex it can get really quickly?
Yeah.
Because you might not want that. So then you need to introduce a failsafe. You need to block off that path, that branch in the tree of decisions, in the decision tree. That's how AI in games work.
Just thinking about it makes my head.
Yes, that is why I'm not a programmer.
I feel like the math lady meme right now, just like trying to figure everything out.
It's super cool though. It sounds super cool and super complex. What are some of the funniest fails in, like, according to you, in that?
So it happened a lot, and usually it's just AI being the stupidest. I was going to curse, but I'm trying to save my curses. You know, just like Disney, we get one.
Yeah, we get one F-bomb.
But usually it's NPCs be acting really stupidly and throwing themselves in harm's way instead of having no sense of self-preservation.
It's me.
Like the Halo series has something like that, where you have the Marines that are on your side. They have no regard for their own life. And by whatever god you follow, do not let them drive a vehicle because that will go wrong. Don't expect them to do anything for you.
It's so funny to listen to fails about this.
More recently, and that's a fail I don't like at all because I love the game. I absolutely adore the game. Is Cyberpunk.
Yeah, we
Cyberpunk
talked about
2077.
This, yeah.
So where I think the biggest AI fail, and it's not even an AI fail, it's really a design flaw, is the police system in Cyberpunk.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
So, I don't know, Manon, do you play Cyberpunk?
I don't know.
I haven't
much
played it either, but I've been following the news about it on Twitter and all that.
I just know all the memes about it.
Okay. So, here's what happens. Let's say I shoot someone. Okay, the cops are going to start to take notice, which is cool. It's like a GTA.
GTA
kind of system.
That I know.
Yeah. Surprisingly, GTA has a better policing system.
Yeah, I said that
than Cyberpunk,
as well.
which just hurts me to the core because Cyberpunk is a lovely, beautiful game. There's so many complexities in there, so I get why some things go wrong. It's gotten a bit of hate Which I think is totally undeserved, except for the PS4 version. But let's talk about that later.
I was inhaling to argue about it.
Yeah. But for the PC version, it's the policing that gets on my nerves. So I shoot someone, and I expect cops to show up. And you expect people, you know, if you just start firing into a crowd, that some sort of policing unit will kick in. And they will chase you, and maybe your heat dies down after a while, just like in GTA. But what happens in Cyberpunk is they just spawn.
I mean, they just spawn, it could be
right in front of you, clipping through a wall or something like that. Police appears out of nowhere. So that's actually an easy solve. You could just have police come in from outside the calculated range of what you're playing.
Your point of view,
And they can arrive fast for me. I don't care about that, you know. Put them in these super speed vehicles, jump out and start shooting at you immediately. That's fine. But they just spawn.
Why is this so funny to me?
If you drive away, they just spawn once again, quite close, and they immediately start blasting you full force. And then to make it worse, it's not just... Okay, so the spawning is egregious, but to make it even worse is, let's say you go around the corner.
And they won't be there anymore.
They'll be there. They just won't know how to follow you anymore.
Mm.
Their pathfinding gets blocked in some kind of way. And you put your head around the corner. Oh, they're back. They know what you're... And they're coming, but you go around and it stops immediately. It's an awful policing system. They don't have vehicles to chase you. They won't use that. They'll run after your car on foot, which for me would be okay. You know, let's talk realism for some of the officers to keep doing that. But this is a futuristic sci-fi game. Where are my speeder bikes that are going to follow me? Where are all those things? And that's a big annoyance.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of annoyances about it. I've seen about people shooting in a crowd.
Yeah.
The crowd going... Down. Like ducking
yeah.
And then they turn away and they look back at the crowd and the crowd will be fine.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, that's just, I think that really takes out of the immersion.
That's because every time you look at something again, it gets recalculated.
Mm.
And that's just that state resetting itself way too quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it gets deleted the moment you stop looking at it, which is weird, you know. it doesn't really work that way, but for simplicity's sake, it gets deleted the moment you stop looking at it, and it's back the moment you look at it again.
So it
forgot to remember that it was ducking.
Okay.
That's stupid.
Yeah.
Also, just on a very personal side note, for the people who play this game and are listening to this podcast, what the hell is up with driving in this game? It is the most awful piece of crap. And there you go. I used my swearing.
Crap is not a swear word.
Okay, yes, I have another one. Perfect.
This is poo-poo.
Because I feel like I'm going to need it. No, it is awful. The driving, because that's how... in the very first part of the game, you step into your car and you have to drive for the first time. And there's two police officers standing on the side of the road. And without intending to, I run them over. The entire police force of that world just spawns in on me, destroys this level one character. And I just lost my shit right there. Because that was a bit too much. And it's really so unmanageable. In that game.
Is there a game you can compare it to? Like the driving, like Mass Effect, like the car in Mass Effect or the car in Borderlands or anything like that? So I can like have an idea.
Usually if it has cars driving in it, I'm not playing it.
I know Borderlands is very bad, but the thing about Borderlands is you can co-op it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to play. If I don't want to drive the car, I make my friend drive the car.
So nothing springs to mind, so I would like to put it in a category of its own.
Okay.
Just all the way at the bottom.
It's worse than any of the examples I gave. Okay.
It is. The few times I've had to drive with a car in a game, which are always my least favorite parts, have been better than this.
Yeah. Okay.
It's awful.
Is it necessary to drive in a game?
Well, some missions do require you to do, which I'm not ashamed to admit I all failed. which is a shame because you lose some story because of that. But it's not necessary.
Okay.
Running is just very slow.
Yeah.
Is there no fast travel?
There is fast travel, but only from certain points to certain points.
And only the police can do it.
Yeah.
Wish we had the spawning system.
Yeah,
on the
exactly. Police. It's just the police is fast traveling every time.
Manal, do you have any examples of bad NPC modeling?
Bad NPC modeling.
Can I say modeling? Is that?
I don't think that's correct.
No,
sorry.
So modeling is the way it'll look.
Yeah.
Just okay.
Not the way it spawns.
The bad NPC AI. There you go.
I don't know. That's a very difficult question to ask me.
I'm thinking as well of ones that I'm like, ooh. But most games I play.
No, but for me it's more like those encounters in video games that you cannot skip. But that's like something completely different. You know, like.
That's not AI, yeah, no, but I get that. Unskippable cutscenes, for example?
No, yeah, that too, and like, I'm thinking of like Pokemon where you have to fight certain NPC characters.
Didn't you have
characters?
This yesterday with Genshin as well? Because she was playing Genshin, Impact, which is a new game on PC.
It's been out for like several
months. On PC and on your iPhone and
and on PlayStation as well, yeah. She started playing yesterday and her audio was super loud. But she couldn't change it because she was in a cutscene.
Yeah, that is awful.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
No, yeah. You can't open your menu when you're in a cutscene. So she had to listen
But
to
can
the
you turn down the PC's volume?
I could, but I was...
She was also in a call with me
I was
at the
in
same
a call,
time.
So I wouldn't be able to hear her.
Because
so.
I need to help her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So there was some issues yesterday.
But that's not really... Yeah, I'm mostly talking about like those NPC you have
I only
to
know
fight.
Like the funny ones about horses flying and like in The Witcher, your horse spawning on the roof and all that kind of stuff I know about. But other than that, I don't think I know very bad examples of AI.
See, the thing is, I'm usually quite forgiving when it comes to that.
Yeah, see, most of those are funny as well.
Because if it doesn't break my game, I don't care. You know, my horse spawns on the roof. Okay, I'll summon it again.
It doesn't affect the gameplay, right?
Yeah, so. I'll just move off
a little
bit. In
Ghost of Tsushima, my ghost spawned in the door, which was very funny.
See, but actually bad AI...
super hard to think about.
It is hard, and the hardest part about it is I looked up some examples before coming to this podcast because I thought that's what they're gonna ask me and I couldn't think of many off the top of my head, but most of the examples I found were from games that no one knows.
Oh,
because
fair.
Of course, you know, low development budget, crappy game, and but if I would talk about it, everybody would be like,
wait,
okay,
what?
I've never heard of it. Cool. I'd never heard of those titles.
Oh,
either.
Fair.
So,
okay.
So what is then the future of AI? Making more complex NPC?
Yeah, it's finding a way to have the actual... The future of AI in games, to me, is in something called proceduralism. So
difficult to
that's a difficult word. It's the buzzword in games right now. So proceduralism, and once again, sorry for my colleagues who are way into this that are listening to me explain this, but I always try to use the normal people version of this, which
yes, thank you,
which
we appreciate it.
I am aware leaves room for error, but here we go. Proceduralism is basically using calculations and math to create things in a game. And now you're going to stop me and say, wait, but isn't that already the case? That's what programming is.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what programming is. But usually when you, for example, see a house in a game, that's going to be handcrafted. It's going to be created in a 3D piece of software. They're going to model this this house. And of course, there's parts of it that they can reuse. And then there's, for example, generators that the programmers will create that say, okay, take all of those pieces, put them slap them together randomly, scatter them over this area, and that's how you build a city. Because of course you're not going to place every single object if you got these huge games yourselves. What is proceduralism? It's doing the modeling but with math, and that takes a bit longer to set up but allows for more variety. So let's say, for example, I create a wall. I tell my piece of software, this is a cube, and it has this dimension in height, this dimension in width. Yeah, that height and that width are already two parameters that are variables. so to say. So I can already change at in proceduralism, change those parameters at any possible time. So at any time, I can say that cube, which I have right now, is going to get bigger or smaller. No matter what's going on with it, I'm going to make it bigger or smaller if I change any of those two. Okay, that's simple. That's the basics. Now, let's say I want to add like a wooden beam or like a corner of these old medieval houses, you know, just another rectangle on a corner, for example. Okay, I place it there. I'm going to call that my zero, zero point, yeah, my starting point. We're gonna get a little bit technical because there's no way to explain this.
We're thinking hard.
Yeah, okay. Without being a little bit technical. I have that on my zero, zero point, but I can move it in an X direction and in a Y direction. So to the left, to the right, up, I can move it in any direction. Those are, again, tree parameters, different variables that at any moment I could change. So I have it there, and let's say I want my next house to look a little bit, right now we just have a cube with a cube on it, with a smaller cube on it, but let's call that a house. Let's say I want my next house to look slightly different. Well, I can just randomize those values. It's going to be a bigger, smaller house, and that beam is going to be on a different position. Now, could, of course, we're going to go to the next step, make it even more complex, where I say, okay, but that beam is only constrained to the corners of that square I'm making. It can only be in the corners. But I don't care if my beam goes all the way up or all the way down. It can be a different height every single time. Once again, new parameters get introduced to that. Yeah. And I can constrain that beam to the corners based on math. We're using vectors. We're using coordinates in a 3D environment. And I can say you're constrained to that zero, zero point or to this point, depending on the values I get from my original cube, which, as you remember, changes again in width or in height. So all those values, the computer is automatically going to take, because a computer can just read the values. It doesn't matter how random it is. And it's going to do something different based on those values with your other object.
Okay.
And that is something I set up. So I say you're constrained to those corners, but I don't manually move those beams anymore. The computer is going to do that for me. Mm. And the computer is going to keep in mind that it needs to be constrained to those corners. After I have initially set it to do that, it's going to do that for me. And then I'm going to keep building and building and building on those set of rules. And that's what we call proceduralism. You know, you have all these calculations working together that are interchangeable. No, not interchangeable, that are just changeable.
Randomized,
able to be randomized, or not even random. I can just say it needs to be 15 meters high and it was 10 meters before. Well, now it's going to recalculate that. But instead of me having to then also change the position of the windows on that building and change the size of the door and change the size of the beams, it's going to recalculate that, all of that automatically for me. And that's proceduralism.
Isn't that less work in the long run?
That is way less work in the long run.
Okay, because at the start he said that it'll be more work to set up.
Yes, to set it up.
Yeah, the setting up.
In the
long run. Because I have to think about all of those things in advance, and I have to make sure it works to start off.
Yeah.
But if I make that one house perfectly...
Yeah, you can make like a whole city randomized.
I can suddenly make a whole city and everything is going to be correct. If I did my math correct.
Yeah, that's going to introduce so many more.
So a whole lot less artistic skill all of a sudden and a whole lot more technical skill. And this is sort of, it's not new in the industry, but it's the new big boom in game development, in game creation.
So it sounds super cool. I'm very impressed by everything.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I lost you there. That's,
I think, one of the easiest ways. It's just, I really admire people who can do all that, because I genuinely can't, and I just play these games and to me it's like, wow, this is all so pretty.
We're just the consumers who don't really think about like the technical
stuff. No, but it looks so cool and so pretty to me, and I'm always very impressed with what people can do, and just that.
It's because I'm a teacher at Digital Arts and Entertainment. Every year we get new students who want to do this, and one of the cliche things we always say is that, look, you might like playing games, but it doesn't mean you like creating games. It's not because I like driving a car that I know how to build a car or maintain a car, even. You know, there's some overlap, I mean, it's good that you like games if you want to create games, but it's not a prerequisite.
Yeah.
Something a lot of people get wrong at the start. They think, oh, it's as fun as playing games.
I don't want to make games. It can be fun. I know, I'm not good at math. I'm not made for that. I don't. My boyfriend did programming.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it. I've seen him do it, and I was like, in game
creation, like, I'm more of on the artist side myself. Like on a personal note, I'm what they would call a character artist. I make characters in games.
That's super interesting.
Which is cool. Technical because everything is 3D based, mm-hmm. so there's a lot of technicality to it. But it's more on the artistic side of things.
Yeah.
For me, the real heroes of game creation are programmers. Because man, I could not do that. The complexities they have to deal with on a daily, and they have to clean up our shit as well.
So they have to make your shit work.
Yeah, they have to make it work. So programmers in this industry, they're the real unsung heroes of creating games. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. But I do think like everyone who, you know, works on a game should deserve some kind of recognition, right? Because I really, for me, like when I play games, I really do look at the art. For me, that's like super important. So like character artists, I think, are amazing. Really love like voice acting, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of cool elements to game design. It takes a village to make a game.
Game for Talk podcast. Reflections on ethics and gaming. With Roof Emanuel.
Okay, I think this is about it for today's episode.
All right.
Robin, what did you think?
Well, I love doing this. Time flew by, so if you want me on a future podcast, you can always invite me.
And of course. We'll keep it in mind.
To all the viewers listening, if I'm not there in a future episode, that means they didn't like me. I'm just saying it.
I just want to say that we did like it. At least I did. I don't know if Manon did.
The judges have decided that you may return.
Very nice.
Well, a bit of a summary. We think VR is dead, apparently.
Oh, I'm going to get so much hate for this. I think...
It's a summary, Robin. It's
VR is dead right now.
Okay, yeah. VR is dead right now. We're not that impressed with the new generation of consoles.
No.
AI in video games is very interesting and very complex.
Absolutely.
And there is not that many bad examples of AI in video games, surprisingly.
Mostly funny ones.
Mostly funny ones, but not really game-breaking ones. And then I would have to recommend you check out the DIE Instagram, Manon's Instagram, which is...
Manon.com, so MANON.COMM.
And my Twitter is @FearTheFairy99. Robin, is there a place where people can reach you that you want to plug?
I don't have a plug. I don't do the Instagram thing.
Oh, okay.
If people want to contact me for whatever reason, I'm always up for that. It's just Robin, Robin.Rode, Rodet, my last name, @howest.be. That's my official work email. That's where I'm available for game-related questions.
Or you can send fan mail if you're really enjoying this episode.
I enjoy drawing, so if people want to draw some things...
oh, yes. Fan art of the podcast, please.
And memes are always
welcome.
Yeah,
please send me memes as well on Instagram.
This podcast was based on a panel by DIE Host. Please do check them out as well. Please do check out the live streams as well. They're on their website. And I think that's it for today.
Yes, it was fun. It was nice to have a guest.
Yeah, it was new.
Yeah.
And fun.
Time flew by for me.
It always did.
It was pleasant.
It always does.
Okay, well, we'll see you next month.
Yes, with a new episode about... What was
social media.
Social media, exactly.
And the next DIA live stream is in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I should know that, right? I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you then, and goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye.